The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
John's most famous encounters, some of them, happened before Roswell. So that's the other part I'm like, none of this was known even remotely in America. Like, at the times he was having this happen in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, were a lot of these encounters.
Brett McClure, director of John Foster, Identifying Phenomenon.
Your background?
Made commercials for local TV stations and cable advertising. That led to ad agencies. And then getting back into the journalism education world, I am a professor and getting my master's degree in professional journalism to lend some credibility to two documentaries I've been working on for 5 or 6 years now.
This is still, you know, it's still kind of a sensitive topic, and people are, even with disclosure, they're still not real comfortable with which way to go on it. So you dove right in with John Foster, and I'm glad you did. What got you started?
John constantly asked me over the years if I was an experiencer, and I wanted to disclaimer that I had a very brief encounter on my 13th birthday outside at night. Object came into my gaze. I went, that's kind of weird. It moved from that side of the sky to the other and then straight up in a matter of, I don't know, 15 seconds. So that was my only encounter in life. But telling John's story, once I met him and saw the artwork and the documentation and later, his tie-ins with Christianity and all of the world's religions. Being someone that grew up Methodist and kind of not really into the mantra of it, John's insistence, if you wrap up what his point is that the modern church has kind of failed at teaching us to be spiritual or meditate in a deliberate way. And that was compelling to me as someone who's had several people in my life that meditation and actually like focusing on positive things. And John says you connect with something or someone, and that is the gist of his experiences, and that we're programmed to forget. That was also very interesting to me, as well as the local tie-in. He has pictures from my alma mater at the University of Nebraska. The entities apparently landed on the football field. I thought that would get people's attention, being from the land of football and corn.
Yeah, that would get your attention. And the film that you've got, 90-minute documentary, Identifying Phenomena, John Foster, Identifying Phenomena. I like the way you went with that because everything knows unidentified. What is it? There's no doubt what this is. I was just blown away when I saw all of those, the pictures that he drew. And he also said that he had at one point had taken a picture and he gave it to one of the relatives and they never returned it. So he actually had a hard copy photograph of a UFO. I think he made a drawing of that, a representation. And I'm like, God, there's so much of it. It blows your mind. You can't imagine what kind of life he's had.
Telling John's story in a way that Luis Elizondo's book says the official line was to ridicule and deny. If empathy is the point of why we're on Earth, I really empathize with John Foster's growing up his entire life. Having these thousands, he says, of experiences before he even remembered any of them. Having that itch in the back of your head of something that you remember from childhood but kind of blocked. And as when he turned 48 years old, I was in my 48th year documenting this, just realizing how many experiences at that point at 48 years old, he started to write down in a much earlier version of his life, continuing that into talking on the UFO circuit and then writing his own books and publishing it as well as the website. So as a documentarian, if I had an abstract concept from John's life, I would go to his website and read the words he wrote when he was 48 years old to document this lifetime of having some pretty extraordinary experiences and being told what he thought was the future, a potential future that they wanted him to be the safety expert on. That was my compelling factor on this is a story that you would present as a documentary.
Well, the thing about it, too, is that the extensive involvement of other people, usually an experiencer, by and large, talks about a single and their own personal, I'm all alone, this is what happened to me. And it's really difficult to validate or get any kind of credence because you have no witnesses, you have nobody else to validate or verify. You're also isolated and alone and easy to make fun of, okay? But with John, he reached out and he started seeing people that he had been in contact with. And you've got them in this documentary. That's brilliant. That was wonderful to be able to have that and see the other faces of the people who are involved with him and hear their stories. How did that happen?
From my background, I have a degree in journalism, and I'm actually a professor or guest lecturer, I should say, getting my master's degree in journalism to help document some of this. In talking to other professionals, I love the fact that the proximity to Offutt Air Force Base and water were both themes on all of these people's histories. Fascinating. June is one of the familiar strangers. As I learned more about June, I met her at the MUFON group where they screened the short film version of this. June instantly, I was attracted to as far as the maternal. She talked about being on Omaha Public Schools school board and a lifetime of putting her money down to help children from various parts of the world, including a boxing league. June talks very freely in the interview about all of her experiences, where she's very public and a fascinating matriarch is what Fred, one of the other familiar strangers, is a redhead, and that is who, at the conclusion of Close Encounters of the Third Kind, tying it back to Disclosure Day, all these people were in the audience and looked up, and they were all past the credits, still weeping and not ready to get up yet, and John kind of recognized the redhead from the ship and said, I saw you on the ship. Okay, to round it out, Marlene doesn't speak as much, but her whole themes are nature. She met John in like 1991 and had a lot of familiar, he was kind of a sounding board for Marlene to start talking publicly about her things. And Nancy is the last familiar stranger. None of these people really wanted to use their last name, but June is very Googleable. Nancy ties hers all back into artwork. She has channeled a lot of her experiences throughout her life that she met John and other artists in the Omaha area who, coincidentally enough, used their artwork to process their encounters. Her main theme was missing time, that she had big 4 or 8 hour chunks of her life that would disappear, and then later she channeled that into art. So growing up, my mom was an artist. I'm kind of an artist. That was the rounding out, the 4 human beings I found in the Omaha area that all knew John and would speak to all of these themes of encounters, was the cherry on top journalistically.
Absolutely. Absolutely. This is what sets it apart from other experiencer stories, because you have somebody who verifies, validates, corroborates John's experiences. That's brilliant. And it's also rare. The other thing about John that's getting into his background, he's an engineer. He was involved in some, give me the background. I'd let you tell the story.
Well, I know exactly where Hallam Nuclear Plant used to be located. I knew a tiny bit about it, but finding Nebraska Public Power District published their original footage of Hallam Nuclear Plant as it was being built. And I realized seeing that clip, John is talking about this in my interviews with him. I need to make that a focus because every entity, whether it was Hallam Nuclear Plant, a nuclear plant being built, he was the safety engineer, and then he moved to California later, and he was the safety engineer on some sort of aerospace, what he says, describes as the first nuclear-powered satellite. And then he went into home building for a while, but everyone who ever consulted him, it was on an engineering, like a structural basis of safety and loads and specific tolerances for certain sorts of physics. So meeting other familiar strangers that shared his engineering views was pretty compelling on there is a certain type of human that's trusted with safety, I found.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and the math, everything that he is doing with his drawings, it's because of that background that he is able to give us a very full picture of what this was like. And he draws the ships, he draws the creatures, the beings that he encountered. And these aren't just your typical grays.
Right. I'm looking at my notes about art, and that's how I found John Foster, was his stone roses. And I got to thinking about artistically and like structurally, how do you go about carving rock into the shape of intricate flowers. That kind of led into the whole, he was a home builder for many years of his career and then went into art. So drawing the line between those two, his detailed drawings of the fortress where all we were supposed to help these children was his mission with the familiar strangers. He approached that from an architectural background and would list out human features like bathrooms without necessarily knowing if any of that was even applicable to the hosts that would be at this place.
Okay.
All of these details were hilarious and so fitting for an intellectual artist.
Well, the other thing too, though, is that it's the thing that he's being given, these details, this depth, this broad base of information, and he is expected not to remember any of it. And that's where he has a big falling out with him. And he's at one point, he makes a decision that he doesn't want to continue with the program. And they warn him that there will be some fallout, not necessarily in his favor as a result. And it was more of a health issue. You know, finding out after you've been kept from knowing this and only had little glimpses and hints and tried to bury it, and then finding out it's all real, it was a shock to his system. And that's, I think, that's a huge message, that the paradigm shift, the shock that we go through when we find out something that is completely, totally foreign and impossible according to our current standards for it to have ever happened, and yet he lived it. That blew him away in many ways.
I was just thinking about how to best serve this project to tell John's story in a respectful way. He says on camera several times that we are the most in-depth understanding of his story, because part of the joy for me is documenting all this, is collecting the few newsreels from over the years, that the point of a 3-minute news story is going to be way different than a 90-minute documentary. So while I do feature the easy answers on explaining his very first encounter at the Bethany grade school, I probably had more pictures of that one event from a John's archive standpoint. But I thought letting the news tell that part of the story and then me digging into both the metaphysical parts and the spiritual parts of what he thought it actually meant, not just the themes or the easy, it was on a playground with 60 other people. It, on paper, I have the most drawings, but it's probably the least consequential to the story. And thinking about if that happened to me in grade school, holy cow, I would have a couple drawings to share about the schematics of what direction it came in. And wow, a young person's mind versus a seasoned engineer's mind on remembering back that far.
Well, and then not only that, it validates other people's story when they're saying that everybody was frozen in time. He was the only one who was cognizant that the entire scene was completely in freeze. Nothing moved. He was aware of what was going on, the ships, the beings, whatever. But people, when they describe missing time, that's the moment. Things happen, you're frozen, you don't remember. Well, this is a deal with John saying, this is why you're frozen. This is what you can't remember, is that there was something happening in that window. And that, I think, is really important to this story, too, when he's talking about the part, now this is from the book, the part where they were called to all of the, him and the other encounter experiencers, they were called to certain places, and he describes these ships where they would go meet at this certain, and it looked like a little, like a teepee in some cases, but they also had certain language they used. I think it was Buffalo and Indians, and that to me is programming. So the minute they heard this phrase, then they were called to greet, to meet, and to gather, and they were given instructions, lessons, teachings. This is mind-boggling, because of nobody else has this kind of detailed content about what goes on behind the scenes. They have all the stuff about, oh, I was on an operation table, which John also has that too, but that's okay, you can't tell me anything about that. Fine, they examined you, but what else went on? And he talks about the education behind the scenes.
One of the most terrifying things in sorting through some of his early artwork was literally him describing the beam of light that would irradiate him, for lack of a better word, and he almost couldn't stand it, but the being that saying, just a few more moments and we will be done. There's no way I can recreate that with CGI without putting my own spin on it. But yeah, between the books, his drawings, and holy cow, he has black binders full of all of his notes from the time he started to remember in 1986, 87, probably up to the modern day. His version of that now being on the website, he can share that with the world forever. I just took pride in capturing the video ones into a getting the average person to come in cold on some of these topics. I purposely chose a lot of the plot development in this to go, wait, there's this part of it and that part of it. And at the end, he believes it's his faith and the Bible and how well he has responded to bearing all of that burden of knowledge through these years is kind of why they chose him in a way to try and educate others when that was a very kooky time. Like, John talks about disinformation in the local media sometimes. They latched onto him and became very friendly because they kind of knew he had some credence to all of his background, his resume, his networks of family, friends, and faith. Like, he was a pretty upstanding individual to choose for these kind of missions. For, I guess I'd call them missions.
You also included his wife because he and Annie went through, this was a challenge for her too, because John, she said one of the things, you know, John wants to talk about this all the time and you have to have a life as well. But the other thing was Annie also had the experience, an experience that she could remember.
Yeah, I for sure wanted to work in Annie. And as the shooting went along, I realized we needed that happy moment where they could look back on their lives sitting in the convertible they were talking about. It turns out it was the exact convertible they were talking about, a Saab from the 90s or 80s. And then doing that at Holmes Lake was just the most perfect cinematic ending to their story to make sure and interview Annie about how it's affected her and how the UFO community treated her as the spouse. Not always so gracefully, we'll put it. But then I realized, keeping track of this story and how many thousands of encounters John had, he did mention having encounters at Holmes Lake Golf Course, which was literally up the hill into the sunset from where I had visually chosen to film their swan song, their happy sunset. Looking back, we made it this far. Holy cow. Was the location of one of his first encounters physically with all this story happening in my hometown. I got a little overwhelmed of like, am I meant to tell this story? I am going to these places and locations and themes without even physically thinking about it.
There's just so much to tell. It's hard to know where to start because you're right. When he gets into the biblical aspect of it, what they told him about how this relates and interrelates with our own Bible history, and that's a whole book in itself. We're not going to get into that. But there is content here that absolutely is mind-blowing to know that he was able to reconcile it, for one thing, and to somehow document what he remembered to the best of his ability, and then go out and share it. I think when he was sharing the story, and John Mack, I believe at one point, was one of the people that he shared it with. It didn't make the book, from what I could see, his book Abductions, but it was part of the process of John trying to get the word out about this during a time when we're talking about disclosure happening right now. He was doing some of his presentations in the early 90s. When you dealt with journalists and media people at that point, there was a very, disrespectful, because it was, oh, we're talking UFOs, hee hee ha ha. All the little giggle asides and the nasty comments when they left the room. I was in the media, and so I saw this and thought, you know, this is, it's unfair, because it was immediately dismissed. And if it wasn't dismissed, there were others around making sure that it would be. So there was also that aspect of being silenced or shamed into silence. And that's what John lived through.
For sure. The theme I've picked up, some of the most insulting points are that some of these people are still alive that realized had some encounters in their own life and worked their way up in government far enough that they realized at a certain point, humanity probably was not ready, and became part of that whole ridicule and deny that Elizondo and other UFOologists, I forget our favorite term lately, but yeah, running up in traditional journalism up against these topics, believe me, I've tried to follow the route of my favorite contacts of John's were Dr. Leo Sprinkle.
Yeah.
Being in Wyoming, that close to Colorado, Utah, Nevada, where a lot of this, I'm going to dip into some of the television shows like the Skinwalker Ranch type phenomena.
Yeah.
the information being harvested there and all the way up through the military installations in Colorado, some of the offshoot Skinwalker, what do they call them, cousin shows, have focused on the Colorado Springs area and Wyoming and some of the famous stories there. Dr. Leo Sprinkle, if you look him up, he was the one that was interviewing all of these people. I think he was a good guy, from what I can tell, but that brought up the whole concept of disinformation and, like, sometimes some of the most famous UFO advocates or reporters could have been plants just to collect info on how close the average UFO personality was getting to some of the critical truths that they did not want published. So as a journalist, I have always kind of had my eyes behind my back and looking at what is the most credible lane to tell these stories, knowing that some of those might have been false leads or right. white rabbits or I don't know how far off the beaten path I want to go there, but fascinating culture.
It's hard because what they were trying to do at the same time that this UFO stuff was coming out was disguise and hide military information. And, you know, you've got the stuff that even now there are certain types of vehicles that are deep top secret programs that they don't want anybody to know about. And if you can disguise that as a UFO, that's to your favor. But if somebody says, no, this is what else is happening, then wait a minute, you've just blown our cover.
Yep. Yes. I did not grow up in a military background, but I fully recognize why Offutt Air Force Base in Omaha was a lot of the scenes of these could be authentic encounters. If we look at the nuclear, I don't think John ever really talked on camera about the concept of UFOs disarming our nuclear weapons at some point. The North Dakota clip. I didn't want to deal with the copyright issues of that, but there is 16 millimeter film of that from 1958, I think, of what appears to be some kind of object hovering above the Air Force Base that somebody happened to be shooting 16 millimeter film. So I would have loved to include that in my documentary, but for legal finding the copyrights of these people and getting all that. But the military aspects of this, I'm trying to think like a journalist again here and report on what would not be damaging in the long term. I think it has to do with some of the energy considerations and how that would affect like geopolitical. If fusion becomes real in the next 10 years, that's what 60 Minutes is reporting. Like maybe we could do it yesterday, but that appears to be part of the story for me here on some of the entity things. My other lane, if I get 2 seconds, the plasma energy orbs. Is that a natural phenomena? And some people have claimed that that is a form of ball lightning that could be as sentient as dolphins. That also piqued my interest. How true that is, we don't know, but the orbs might be sentient energy entities.
Yeah.
That was my favorite offshoot.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly that it is a sentient being and however it manifests. And if you've had any kind of intuitive background in anything, mediumship, psychic abilities, then you deal with these. And sometimes you can see them. Other times you don't. You feel a presence. And sometimes you can photograph them. But that element is a part of John's story too. He covers so much territory in this. It's broad-based. You get everything from the electrical, the engineering part of it, the background that gives him the ability to draw very accurately some of the ships that he has seen and the beings he's seen and the descriptions that he can offer because of that background in terms of knowing the math, knowing this shouldn't be able to happen and yet it did, and then being able to say, they also made us forget. We were programmed to forget. And then when he had the conversation about wanting not to be part of the program, they said, well, then you won't continue with us on this new journey. But he wanted to be able to basically step out of it and live his life. I don't think he anticipated the life he was going to live.
For sure. John is 87, I believe, years old, and dealing with a different generation of just vernacular. The first time I realized John uses the verb manifest in a very electrical way, where now in current times we would say, I want to manifest wealth or manifest health. That was one of the key differences. I had to keep reminding myself, manifest is like a verb that means to come out of thin air electrically somehow. I just botched that quote, but that was one of the key things. I love to point out the differences. I'm like, I'm Gen X. I'm not exactly young, but trying to picture all these concepts for a generation that might be 18 years old, they're like, yeah, duh, aliens are real. Why they would find this historically relevant, and just to highlight or minimize some of the language differences that might confuse some of when the other favorite thing is a stagecoach was one of his UFO types. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's necessarily the shape that a younger generation would see if that appeared to them when they're 13 years old.
Yeah. 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 See, that's the thing. When people are trying to do this historically, we are evolving past some of the language, the verbiage that has been used prior to this to even, you know, to know. That would be like from the Bible, the wheels in the sky. Ezekiel saw the wheel. Okay. What? In the sky? If you look at it, he might have been describing a helicopter, a drone. And so we didn't have that language then because things didn't fly that we knew of. And, you know, these are the things that are the challenge, figuring out how to describe it and use words that in some ways don't even exist because we have not had a broad-based community, social conformity to all agree upon how to describe it. And that gets challenging. The thing I like with his descriptions in Manifest, when you see something come out of a cloud, and one of my favorite, I bought one of the pictures that he had, that he drew, and this is, it emanates from beside a fence, and you see this little kind of a smoke thing come up from the ground, and then out of that smoke it turns into a cloud, and then all of a sudden a UFO comes out of it. And so it's coming, to me, from another dimension. It's coming into our dimension, into our space. And when people say, well, it appeared out of, you know, it was there 1 minute and it wasn't, well, he shows the fog or that background where it manifests. It originates from thin air, zero, all of a sudden it's there. And the way that you're able to, I think, understand his experiences with those drawings, you can see this would have been so difficult to have anybody believe you at that time, because this is science fiction.
Yeah. My favorite part of discovering just what all assets John had was going through his website, kind of looking at what he was linking to, including you. I discovered you, John. Some of the YouTube videos, I realized he must have ripped these from DVD, including his probably most famous, the 2001 UFO conference in Nevada, is what he talks about in the books and talks about, like, some of the most interesting experiences they had that they questioned, like how many of these people are authentic and how many of these people are government, all happened at that event. And we happen to have John's PowerPoint keynote as a documentarian, hearing him in 2000 explain this, a younger version of John, but just seasoned enough, he has been practicing some of these concepts out loud and gets to perform them for the most captive audience, and to witness that decades later in a documentarian. Fascinating to see some of the local places that he points to, exact corners of a mountain or lake. And he said it happened on the east side at this time of day, and this is what the sky looked like. Molecularly, that kind of color in the sky indicates this kind of iron. Like, there is no greater gift than having a younger version of yourself explain your signature concepts in your prime.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. Kalshi. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
The Sherwin-Williams Summer Sale is here. Get 30% off select paints and stains, or 35% off our newest product, Emerald Symmetry, July 17th through the 27th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Now, with quote, air quote, disclosure, I have a difficult time with that because it's been happening all along. It's like, yeah. It's basically finally being allowed to talk about it. It isn't really disclosure. It's permission to say, yeah, it's like the emperor's clothing story. You know, everybody's, oh, the emperor is wearing this lovely suit when he's naked. And we've been able to somehow accept that UFOs aren't real because we're being told they're not real and they'll make fun of you if you say they are and all of that. And now finally, it's okay to say it. It's like, this is not disclosure. This is acceptance. They're not going to throw you in the funny farm or whatever you want to, how you want to term it, shame you, because people are finally able to talk about it. And that, I still have a difficult time knowing that John had to put up with his nonsense. And finally, he's being proven or will be proved correct with his stuff saying, this is what happened. This is, I've got proof. And now we can talk about it. And so now it's real. Where before it was real, we just couldn't talk about it. I'm probably going on too long about that, but.
No, it makes sense. I have a minor in history, and all of the cliches about history is written by the victor. I think the U.S. government won on a lot of their efforts to shape certain topics over the years. John alludes to every once in a while in some of the material I didn't use about family connections to intelligence and a little bit into other religions in the Midwest, on how certain parts of what he learned were a core concept of their particular faith. He warned me, he's like, I don't think that will serve anything productive if you go highlighting certain parts of my story that may be true, but might be even more offensive to certain people on different grounds of either national security or religious freedom, I guess I'm calling it, to dive into what most people know is a Christian background of helping the neighbor and like some of the biblical angles of what is an angel, what is an archangel, the whole fallen, some might be good, some might be bad, and you have to choose based on your knowledge of how humanity and Christianity works, that there is a time in your life you have to choose whether or not to help your creator or your neighbor. Like, he kind of did the same with his home building. He wanted it to be affordable to help people build their own house. He was taking it pretty personal.
Yeah.
Help people was his, that's the very first of my 10 chapters of the documentary, was helping people.
And I think that's John, his heart. I'm sure that's why he was chosen, because he has a very generous soul. And there's a part in there when he had an experience, and the thing that actually for him made it okay was a Native American woman who approached him and said, this happens, this is real, these beings appear. And so when he was trying to say, yes, I saw this, it's a being, it's not my imagination, it isn't a nightmare, it's not meant to frighten you, it's a reality. And the one person who came up to him was Native American, and in her culture, her background, her view, this was normal.
I mean, I was aware of the 13-year-old connotation, where I'm probably mangling the intricacies, but when a young man turned 13 and they sent him kind of out into his vision quest to come back a man, like learn some things about the land and see what you learn in 30 days in the desert by yourself, I couldn't help think of John on Skinwalker Ranch. Touches up against some of the Native American traditions from Utah there, and I believe it's Navajo. It doesn't matter what particular tribe, but Native American cultures do have sky entities that they associate with stars. And a lot of that, there should be people studying that right now on the number of times John mentioned he felt socially awkward when they trusted him to come into some ceremonies and like both impart what he had learned about in his experiences in modern America, and comparing that, he felt, even on camera, I didn't include this in the documentary, but he apologized for not being a more graceful ambassador, for being one of the few modern European looking Americans to be invited into some of those ceremonies that were fascinating. But I didn't even feel enough credence to include that part, because I don't know all of the what would be disrespectful to even talk about what kind of ceremonies I'm talking about.
Yeah.
The crazy part of John's story on, yes, I enjoyed the most part, and I should have worked in more of his artwork involving a lot of the Native American locations and like sacred sites are, coincidentally enough, near where he had some of his most impactful encounters.
You had a chance to hear so much of his stories, his history, his life prior to learning about this. Seemed pretty normal. And then after learning, it took a whole different trajectory. What's your takeaway?
That's a hard one. I mean, paring the story down is different than experiencing some of these things. I think I talked about the empathy I felt to John, that he spent, I don't know if he fully understands the pop culture parts of, like, we've really only believed witnesses since maybe the 80s, like Close Encounters, The X-Files. I tried to tell John the third season of Twin Peaks, the whole concept, what Twin Peaks are, is the up and down of the current of electricity. And I would say, I don't think you have 18 hours to watch the third season of Twin Peaks, but some of what you talk about is being validated in pop culture again by people studying transcendental meditation. Is my way of summing up David Lynch. It was fascinating on this whole thing journey for me as being a somewhat agnostic person and realizing some of the spiritual things we talk about, both transcendental meditation, like the nature of electricity is kind of our consciousness. And that might be the whole relation on whatever is the ultimate, I'm going to botch the term, host, whether that's religious of the Christian God or whatever created all of this from an agnostic standpoint is very much tied in with what early religions might have been when you look at cathedral design and Buddhist monks listening to certain tones to result in a certain mental brainwave condition that we now know is like binaural, some of the gateway tapes and the Monroe Institute. What we know about consciousness all ties into early religion in a way.
John tries to put some of this together in his books. He's got three books. Well, there are more, but he has tried to give people an idea of where some of these ideas originated, and that here you have supposedly an alien. I don't know what else to, you know, an entity, an extraterrestrial. We don't really know where they originate. We just know they're here, and we have determined that we're going to call them aliens or ETs. They could be transdimensionals. They could be others that we haven't decided how to name them yet. In the meantime, They seem to have a very good grasp on our history. And so to be in a class with a bunch of other people, the familiar strangers, learning about our religion, our religious background, and how this has all gone back for centuries and how they've coordinated it and programmed it. And here you are in a program where you're supposed to take care of the others in your group, and you are designing a building and infrastructure to warehouse the immigrants who are coming in from South America. This is the program that they were involved in. And he said, you know, the building is still there and the program may or may not be continuing, but there are several who are deceased and who are no longer in that program. But that was the gist of what was happening. They were being programmed to assimilate and gather together and coordinate a group that would help with the, which we were starting to see, immigrants from South America. Holy cow. And that was back in the, what, 60s, 50s that they were doing this?
Mm-hmm. June Blair is the only one of the familiar strangers that uses her last name. But yeah, the program was talking probably about June's building. Maybe it took a turn, but she was inspired to provide this building called the Power and Landing Building. And she had another building very near the Missouri River where a lot of these encounters happened. And I believe if you look at where the other familiar stranger, Marlene, lived North Omaha. All of these people were geographically linked by the places they grew up, and June happened to own all of the land that they told John was going to be used for the program. It is fascinating on how many of these are water-based phenomena and electricity or some kind of ethereal energy when they were relating back these experiences they had when they were younger. as a middle-aged person, John went out of his way to stress that in the year he had this happen, they had video displays that played back a program like an iPad or whatever. Like, it was training for them on giant screens when there was barely even television in America yet. I found that fascinating. He would bring up, now you know what year this happened. John's most famous encounters, some of them happened before Roswell. So that's the other part. I'm like, none of this was known even remotely in America. Like, at the times he was having this happen in the 30s, 40s, and 50s were a lot of these encounters. Fascinating to compare that with what was going on in New Mexico at the time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. In so many ways, it tells you the behind the scenes that we were not allowed to own or to even make any reference to, because they tried to discredit Roswell in so many different ways and then harass the people and threaten the people who were a part of that. I've interviewed, I can't remember how many times, but a couple of times, the guy who wrote the Roswell and the Children of Roswell, he also spoke with the grandchildren, and they remember what was going on at that time. And they remember certain things that their relatives, their parents, their uncles, aunts, whatever, were being told to shut up about. It's just like, those are their stories. To me, that says there's a different program during that time that they were trying to keep things under wraps and not allow that any of this UFO stuff was real, because it might in some way disclose the fact that they were working on military programs. Incidentally, the military stuff that they were working on, it was not even any way able to resemble the kind of thing that you described at age 13, seeing something manifest and then go whoop out of the sky and not be there. And we weren't anywhere near that in 1947. But of course, the fear was that if they thought we could be near, or they implied that that was ours, then that would give us an edge over China, Russia, whoever else was the competitor at the time. There's just so much drama and soap opera.
Yeah, for sure.
Anyway,
the drama part, I didn't want to totally play up how much effect that this whole topic had on John's marriage, but he detailed in the interviews, I didn't know quite how to address that in 90 minutes, but I think he and Annie broke up for several years, and them getting back together was part of an encounter he had too, where he knew the exact right thing that she had been thinking about was the one threat to their family or just his reputation in a small town. He was given a vision of how to get her back in a way, is what I took out of his discussion from it, and admits it was hard to go to some of these conferences and be the people that were pointing at you. They knew you were the fresh meat on the speaking circuit, and if your story was more entertaining than other people that told their truth back then, a certain degree, if you think about the National Enquirer back then, yeah, how public were you willing to be to sell your story to sensationalists type places, where John always seemed to try and find the legitimate news stations, scientific magazines, and like journals to tell his side of what he had documented, and more than in a sensationalistic gossip type way. That was another note of mine. He was obsessed with his credibility.
He didn't have to make anything up. This stuff is so absolutely beyond the pale in terms of the detail and the kind of experiences he had. There's nothing that compares. I've read this stuff for years. I used to hide out when I would stay home from school being sick. Not real sick, but, you know, kind of sick.
Right.
Reading Fate magazine in my grandmother's, she'd have this stash of Fate magazines, and it had all the good stuff in it. So UFOs, you know, anything. I don't think I remember a lot about Bigfoot at that time, but I grew into that. The stuff that John had, there's so much in it that there was nothing being said at that time about the behind the scenes programming that the aliens, ETs, extraterrestrials, that they did to make sure that you didn't remember, that they allowed you to remember certain things. And then the rest of it was just basically off the chart, and it was a blank space. That's the missing time, or a screen memory where you saw something. I think one of the people talks about, one of the women, when she talks about her seeing her friend, and the friend says, well, come with me, let's go do this. And then as soon as she got to wherever that friend had led her, the friend turned into a gray. So you don't know what you're seeing. And that is important in terms of this documentary. You're giving people a behind-the-scenes look that they may not have had access to. Whatever generation they're from, this is solid gold. This is information. It's something that gives us a look at what else might be happening from an experiencer's point of view, but also from the other side of things that were not meant to be disclosed because it's an ongoing program. And if you disclose it, then the program goes, it doesn't work. You can't tell people how it's going to work. You have to see how they're going to play it out. And that could have been it, a whole experiment. Would these people listen? How far would they go? Were they that easy to program, manipulate, and control? That, I think, is also part of this story.
For sure. I loved looking at Spielberg's history on he helped produce Men in Black, and just that concept of a man in a suit somewhere could possess a similar wand that would make you forget about an event. Like, it hit me on disclosure day. I'm like, yeah, there could be a wand that does other things too that we don't quite understand how time and space could be affected by a tiny piece of what looks like a remote control. I've enjoyed telling John's story as journalistically sound as I can and approaching from a skeptic standpoint the exact parts of spirituality that he claims human beings should be working on was the other part of the program, other than helping immigrants coming from South America, mainly children, and to help them develop their spiritual and I almost want to say psionic abilities appears to be part of this process.
Yeah. Yeah. That my sense is that the telepathy, that other awareness that we have that has nothing to do with really language or the outer presence, but the in presence. Are you really paying attention? Are you so busy, caught up in making an impression on somebody that you're not getting the impressions that are being telegraphed to you? And that happens around us all the time with animals, with people, with all sorts of experiences that sometimes we're so self-absorbed or self-insecure that we're focused too much on that expectation of, does somebody like me? Are they going to, what do they think about me? Instead of, what's going on here? What am I missing? What's happening behind the scenes? And I think that's a lot of what this suggests, is that we miss so much. And it's all around us, that if we start changing our perspective, our focus to that internal sensation of, am I okay in this space? Is there something that I am missing? Can I learn more? What's happening? And once you start questioning, then you start seeing all sorts of interesting things.
I love that John Foster's wife, Annie, summed it up that as hard as it was sometimes to follow John into the woods, that she was at least getting some amazing camping experiences out of it. Even if she had to question sometime, when she had her first encounter, it was kind of a validating factor of, well, he was right all along and I got some nice camping experiences in nature. But how am I going to explain this to anyone else that he was right all along?
Yeah, and that was hard. Between the two of them, they are, an exemplary couple, because they've been through all of this together. And being in a community, a small town or small, a community where, again, you're talking 30s, 40s, 50s, everything's stable. You know everything. It's A, B, C, D, E. You know, everything is just all organized. And the answer's there, black and white. There's nothing to question. And then John brings this totally off-the-wall sci-fi thing that he's experiencing, and you're going, uh-oh. and I think Annie's feeling was, okay, I think we need to move. And she didn't want to move. She's like, how do I stay here and live with this guy who's telling us that all these things are happening and we're just not allowed to remember it? And he remembers everything, and then that makes him an outcast. And then whoever's with him is an outcast. That was a struggle. That was a very real struggle. And he's honest about that. And I'm so glad that you were able to include the both of them and get, you know, the picture of the two of them together, because that's outstanding.
Awesome. Thank you.
All right. For people to see this availability.
Right now we're planning, I released it on YouTube. There's some music questions if it gets above a certain amount of playback, but I've been through the whole film festival circuit. I'm going to air it locally at one of our independent cinema festivals that celebrates all levels of filmmaking, where I first premiered the 11-minute version of John Short's story. But then from there, I'm looking at Tubi. I'm looking at distribution on the type of networks. It's kind of hard to say if this would lump into a traditional UFO thing versus something that focuses on Gaia or alternative energy, those kind of networks. There's a lot of places that this could resonate and get out the story that, yeah, this has been happening for years, and here's what we're figuring out about the physics and the art of it.
Well, here you've got Disclosure Day with Steven Spielberg, and that's all based on certain stories and certain fictions versus John's story that's based on his lifelong experiences. There's an education in this that you can learn a thing or two because of what he has lived throughout his life and then is trying to share and say, hey, this is going on here. Make of it what you want, but I experienced it. And I think that's where this lives, is it isn't fiction. It's John's experience. And he's tried to give a very wholehearted, genuine description of what it's like to live in between our reality and a reality we have yet to even reconcile, let alone define with our science. It's just mind-boggling. So hopefully it'll open a few minds and a few doors.
For sure. And thanks as always for Wendy. You definitely cover all of this from equal parts spiritual and scientific. So it was a no-brainer on you've met John and told his parts of his story that I wouldn't have noticed even from interviewing him. So kudos on asking the right questions and not being afraid to go to areas that the traditional media is probably not going to touch.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. John Foster Identified Phenomena. That is the video, and it's on YouTube. And Vizziness, VIZZYNESSLLC. That's the website, YouTube. And if anybody has questions and would like to contact you, is that the best place to reach you?
Rhett@vizziness.com is probably the easiest way to get a hold of me. Otherwise, yeah, I'm on a lot of different social media and have been documenting all kinds of things. So if you've got a documentary project in mind, give me a ring in this vein. Happy to, journalistically document what in the world has been going on in the last several decades.
Thank you for giving John the credibility that he has earned and a broad-based look at this experience without trying to discount any of it. It just give it a place to live and to expose a lot more people to the reality of this without being frightened. It's like, this is happening, and it's just awesome. And we've got all sorts of stuff to learn from it. And John has left a legacy of giving us things that we hadn't really been able to reconcile without somebody else saying, this is what I've lived. And the familiar strangers step in and say, yep, been there too. Thank you.
You bet. Thanks, Wendy. It's been an honor to make sure John got to see this as well, to have his story summed up and to lend some of that empathy I wanted him to know. The world knows that, yeah, what he documented.
Yes. John's in his late 80s, and this has been a work in progress and a lifelong legacy for him to try and, you know, stay with it, stay true to it. With Disclosure happening now, I think it speaks for itself. I will put details, documents, whatever, in the description for the show if you want to get a hold of any of this information. Again, the website is vizziness.com.
John's most famous encounters, some of them, happened before Roswell. So that's the other part. I'm like, none of this was known even remotely in America. Like, at the times he was having this happen in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, were a lot of these encounters. Fascinating to compare that with what was going on in New Mexico at the time.
Rhett McClure, director of John Foster Identified Phenomenon.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. Kalshi. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.